Mary O. from Laguna Niguel.
Hey, everybody. How are you tonight?
Hey, Mary.
My name is Mary. I'm an alcoholic. My sobriety date is September 4th, 1987. I have a sponsor, Darlene, who has a sponsor, and then the next sponsor, I think, is dead. I think that's as far as it goes, because they're getting really old. I tell you that because I was taught to have a sobriety date when I came here, and to have a sponsor, and to have a home group. And the fact is, I got to tell you, I got like 5 home groups because I go to a minimum of 5 meetings, and I don't miss them unless I'm really, really sick. So I don't know how you pick a home group. So I got 5 home groups. So I'm going to tell you a little bit about what it was like, what happened, and what it's like now. I want to thank Marsha for inviting me to speak. I want to thank all my, what's the word, homeboys? Is that like your, what is the new? Bulldogs. Road dogs. Okay, I'm so out of it. I want you to know I'm also turning 60 on my 25th birthday in September. So, you know, lack of estrogen and being a little bit above this generation. All these guys and gals that you see here, they're all teaching me to be really cool. So I'm really, really grateful for them. Really grateful for them. As I put my old lady glasses on, I'm really cool. Okay, what we're going to do tonight, I'm going to share a little bit about what it was like, what happened, what it's like now with you as I take you through the steps and the principles and the virtues. I came up with this idea about a year ago because I was so sick of hearing my story. And so I thought, you know what, I'm going to talk about something that's really vital to Alcoholics Anonymous, really important, that doesn't get talked about a lot. And I'll incorporate a little bit of my story in that too. So I don't have notes or anything. I just have the principles and virtues written down, just so you know, because I am too estrogen challenged to remember all of them. So that's what I go off. So the first I talk about the steps, I'll tell you a little bit about my story while I incorporate these. So we admitted that we were powerless over alcohol and that our lives had become unmanageable. And that virtue is honesty. And one of the things that I had to learn to do was to be totally honest. It says in the big book, if we are fearless, thorough, and honest, we have a chance. If we're not, we don't have a chance in heck. So as you start these steps, as you start this process, you want to really think about being honest. And I was a liar and a cheat and a thief when I came here. I don't know about you. I love to shoplift. I didn't know you had to have money in your checking account to write a check. I landed in jail for writing hot checks. While I was in jail, they put me in the woman's side because I looked so hot that they didn't want me in with all those scuzzy women. And so this guy comes by and he's got a little thing and he's going down the jail and I'm sitting there and he goes, what did you do to get in here? And I said, and I told him, and he said, oh, you don't belong here. And I'm sitting there and I'm going, God, he's kind of cute. Maybe that'll be my next, you know, hostage, as what I took him. That's the kind of thinking I had, you know. I'm sitting there in jail and I'm thinking about, oh, he's kind of cute. So if I have to stay in here, maybe I'll hook up with him. So anyway, I was pretty crazy. And one of the things that we talk about, the virtue of step one is surrender. That capitulation to hopelessness. That may be a big word for a lot of people, but what that means is that we felt we were totally hopeless, and we had to surrender to that. We had to surrender to the fact that we couldn't do it our way anymore. And I will tell you this, I still had the house, I had married a guy, I had a baby when I came here, a 1.5-year-old, and I had all the stuff, all of it. And I was flipping dying on the inside, just dying. And people used to come up to me and go, Mary, you're the most together woman I know. And I was just like, whoa. Well, you don't know me. And I'm not going to let you know me, because I've got this facade going on that teaches me how to lie to myself. And it worked for many years. And by the time I got here, that had quit working. Along with the drinking, that had quit working. And, you know, that gift of desperation, I want you to know, I don't care how you get here, if you're a skid row, if you're living out of your car, if you're living off the streets, or if you're living in a $3 million house in misery, there's no difference. Doesn't matter. We all feel the same. Step two, came to believe that a power greater than ourselves could restore us to sanity. And that principle is hope. And then when we talk about that principle, step two is the mirror image or opposite of step one. In step one, we admit, you know, you admit that alcohol is our higher power and that our lives are unmanageable. And in step two, we find a different higher power who we hope will bring about a return to sanity in the management of our lives. So the first thing we got to do in step two is we got to admit that we were insane. Okay, so let me tell you about my insanity. I was 14 years old. Oh, God, you guys are all going to have to hear the girdle story again. And I go to this big party, and they're serving Everclear, and I'm fat, and I wear one of these big fat girdles. And so, you know, the kind you have to lay down, takes 5 minutes to get in. They call it shapewear now. And so I drink the Everclear, and I pass out, and I go into the room, and Keith, the cowboy, is, this happened in Texas, is going to come in, and he thinks he's going to get lucky. And so he starts huffing and puffing, and he can't get that damn girdle off, you know. And finally, he just gives up, you know. And so I thank goodness for that darn girdle, but that's the insanity of my drinking. 14 years old, they told me not to drink it. I drank a jelly glass full, this tall, and said, watch me. And that began my love affair with alcohol. I was pretty, I was thin, I could dance, I could get naked and have fun, and I could do all those things that I watched all my friends do that I was too inhibited to do. So you give me alcohol and it all breaks loose. It all, and I can do anything and be anybody I wanted to be. So you give me alcohol, and now I really got a facade going on, because I can go to the dive bars and play with you, and I can go to the governor's mansion with my husband and play with all those hoity-toity people. And I can go to the Ritz-Carlton and have high tea and look just like a lady. Although I didn't know really anything about being a lady. I just pretended. But that wasn't really who I was. You know, but alcohol gave me the ability to do that until it stopped working. So I did a lot of insane behavior. I drove an MG with 9 people in it. And realized that it was a really good thing, because I realized I was on a railroad track. And the axle to the MG went right down the railroad track. Otherwise, I probably would have cut my car in half. And I was so drunk on Long Island iced teas, I had no idea. And I had 8 people stepped into that 2-seater MGB. And they were, I was working for the YMCA, and they were all my little camp counselors. And they were all under 21, and I had taken them to have fun at happy hour. And those were the kind of insane things I did. So get in touch with your insanity. List it all out. It's a good thing to do. Now, here comes step three, where we have to make a decision. And when you make a decision, basically what you're saying is that you're making a decision not only to do this step, but to continue on with the rest of the steps. So we made a decision to turn our will and our lives over to the care of a God as we understand Him. And that means you figure out how you're going to, how do you understand your God? How do you don't even have to call Him God. You can call them anything you want to. It can be Alcoholics Anonymous. It can be your sponsor. I want to tell you, I turned my will and my life over to the care of my sponsor when I came in. I was that desperate. If she had told me to stand on my head and paint my nose green in the middle of a meeting, I would have. I was that desperate. I wanted, number one, I wanted what she had, because she lived in a god-awful trailer, and I don't even mean a mobile home. She lived in a trailer that shook on the railroad tracks of Bell Garbage, we called Bell Gardens, Bell Garbage, California. And she had raised 6 kids without a husband, and one of her sons was a priest, and she was Catholic, Irish Catholic, and she smoked cigarettes, rah, 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 rah. She talked like this. She used to say to me, I would call her up and I'd go, my husband thinks I'm being brainwashed and I've joined a cult. And she says, your brain needs watching, click, and hang up on me. And then I would call her and I would say, you know, I got, you know what you did to me today? I'm not talking to you about until you write about this, click. And that's the kind of sponsor I had. You know, and I was really grateful that I had that kind of sponsor. You know, this will love you till you love yourself. I'm sorry, I didn't get raised on that. I know it's all lovey-dovey down here in Orange County, but that is not the way I got raised, and I'm really glad that I didn't get raised with that. I sponsor the way I was sponsored. I have empathy. I love my sponsees. Don't ever get me wrong. And they know they're loved, and they know they have unconditional love. But they also know that I don't baby them. I don't baby them. You know, because if somebody babied me, I'd be drunk. I would never have stayed sober. You know, oh, that's okay, Mary. Just keep coming back. You know, they said, sit down and shut up and listen. You don't have anything to share. You're a newcomer, and you don't know how to stay sober. So that's what you're going to do. Sit down and shut up and listen. And, yeah, it was not very nice. And it was not very easy, but it was the best thing in the world for my kind of alcoholism. So the third principle is faith. And when we turn our will and our lives over to the care of God, we understand Him. That's the first part of having faith, of understanding that somebody can guide your life. Because God knows, I tried it for 35 years. For 35 years, I did it my way, and it didn't work. For 35 years, I did every dance, every song, every twist that I could do to make it work. You know, I did the whole marriage dance with my husband. Well, if I say this, he'll say this. If I do this, I'll do this. I tried to manipulate and con, and it was so flippin' much work, and I couldn't make it happen. I didn't know why. I thought you guys all had the secret, and I didn't, and I just was left out of the secret, and I didn't know how to do it, you know, and I did the same thing in sobriety. You know, everybody was talking about their program, and I went up to my sponsor and I said, hey, you didn't give me a program. And she goes, what are you talking about? And I said, you know, like what you get those programs when you go to the theater, everybody's talking about their program. You didn't give me one. Oh, well, she laughed at me. I think till her dying day, she used to share that story from the podium because it was so hilarious. Because that's the way I was. I was, oh, God. But I have an incredible faith now. I want to tell you, I have a faith that never leaves now. For a long time, you hear the people say, I have a deep and abiding faith that comes and goes. Mine doesn't go anymore. And I'll tell you, that has been tested time and time again. And I'll tell you how it's been tested. At 4.5 years of sobriety, I got a call from the clinic where we had been artificially inseminated. And I never got pregnant from those. And they said, the donor has come down with AIDS. You need to come in and get tested. And I said, well, has anybody ever gotten AIDS from artificial insemination? And this was in 1987. And they said, well, not that we know of. And the fact was, one of the other women that had used this guy's sperm had come down with AIDS. And that's why they were calling me. Lie. So anyway, the fact is I went down and I got tested, and then they said it was inconclusive, which there is no inconclusive AIDS test. They just knew they were, like, in trouble now because now another woman had it. So they tested me again, and I got diagnosed with full-blown AIDS in 1987 from artificial insemination that occurred my last one in 1984. So... Now I'm sorry, not 1987, that's when I got sober. 1991 was when I found out. So now I'm 6 years into having AIDS, and they tell me I have a year to live. And, you know, there comes a point in your sobriety, they talk about the jumping off point. And I got to tell you, they told me I'd be bedridden in a year. And I'm thinking to myself, do I want to die drunk? Do I want to die sober? What do you think could be in store for me? And at 4.5 years of sobriety, I had enough faith. I had enough of those experiences that I had walked through that come out the other side and you go, wow, how'd I do that? You know, what a great lesson. What a great opportunity for me to grow in my program. I love it. Don't you love it when they say it's an opportunity to grow? And what they're really saying is hold on and feel the pain, you know? Because it's going to be painful, baby. It's going to be painful, you know? And you really don't want to do it, but you don't have any choice, you know, in the beginning. You just don't have any choice. Well, I had a choice. I really had a choice to drink. We all do, every day. And I said, I hit my knees and I said, okay, God, I'm going to take the ride. I'm going to take the ride with you and show me the way. And 28 years later, I'm still here. And I could have missed it. Bam! I could have missed it. What a God thing that is, you know? So I got to tell you, I don't know if my faith is deeper than yours, because I know that every day you could breathe on me wrong. PJ, you know, he's got a cold right now. We could, like, tongue each other. It'd be all over for me, you know. So I have to be really careful. I'm sorry. I know. I was trying to be funny. It didn't go over well. Take that off the tape. Erase. PJ, I'm so sorry. I owe you amends. I'll never say it again. Oh, well. Okay, moving right along to step 4. Made a searching and fearless moral inventory of ourselves. By the way, I sponsor him, so that's really even more inappropriate. You know, if you want an appropriate sponsor, don't pick me. Nah. Okay. So 4 is made a searching and fearless moral inventory of ourselves, and we really need courage to do that. And that really is the principle of step 4. You've got to have that courage to go in there and look at the exact nature, our nature. That's what that last column is. What is your true nature? Oh, man. Mine was not good. Mine was lie, cheat, thief, make myself look good at all costs, and selfishness and self-centered, and just the complete bondage of self. When I think of bondage, well, I'm not going to tell you what I think. I'm reading 50 Shades of Grey right now. I'm on the last book. So anyway, so bondage, all I can do is think of myself just freaking wrapped in chains, just sitting there going, Mary, 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 me, 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 me. That's my absolute, you know, ohm to myself. And there I am, bondage of self. And that's me. That's what I was. All I thought about was what you thought about me, was what I thought about me, and how the world thought about me. And I never once thought about you guys. If I did at that point, it was with a hook. And it was always so I could get something. Oh, I was just lovely. I was just a lovely woman. I'm sure you'd want to date me. And so the principle of step 4, in another set of principles, which you might want to call this one a virtue, is the inventory of self and the honesty that goes with that inventory of self. This is the thoroughness that I talked about way back in the beginning. To have an honest appraisal, it talks about in the big book. You know, so you're going to have to get there. Okay, step five, admitted to God, to ourselves, and to another human being, the exact nature of our wrongs. Okay, there's that word nature. What was the nature of our wrongs? And what happens with this is we get the principle of integrity. And we have to start living with integrity. After we share all that stuff with another human being, and you can pick whoever you want to. I think it's a great idea to pick your sponsor. The reason I picked my sponsor is that everybody told me that, number one, you're going to have a sense of freedom after this step, and number two, you're going to bond with your sponsor. You're going to have a feeling about your sponsor, especially that first inventory. If you switch sponsors later, no biggie. But you will always have a bond with that first sponsor because you have shared that inventory for that very first time. And my first sponsor, I had her until I moved down here at 4.5 years of sobriety. And I begged her to keep me and she wouldn't do it. She said, Mary, it's too close. She said, you've got to get a sponsor down there or you'll come back here for meetings. And I'm so grateful she did that. But nobody could ever have taken her place. Nobody. It's a great, great relationship. So we start having a little bit of integrity after we do the fifth step. When we see our nature, when we see the way we are, a little bit of God conscious with 3 steps prior to that, you know. So then we go on to step 6. And that principle is willingness. We were entirely ready. We were entirely, no reservations, ready to have God remove all these defects of character. Well, I don't know about you, but I still haven't taken that step. Because I got some defects of character that I like, thank you very much. And I just am not willing yet to have them taken at almost 25 years of sobriety. And you know what? Maybe there'll come a time when I will. What I do ask in my morning prayers every morning is I ask him to take away the character defects that stand in the way of my usefulness to you and God. So forever that day, take away the character defects that stand in the way of whatever God is going to have me do that day. So that's how I kind of get around that. You know, I told you I was a manipulator. I'm still doing it at 25 years. So the truth of the matter is truth, which is what we had in the fifth step when we did our confession to God and another human being, and now we're at willingness again. Willingness is all over the big book of Alcoholics Anonymous. It's everywhere. Willingness, choosing to abandon your defects of character. It is a choice. It is a choice. Are you willing to make that choice? God, we're only at step 6, and if you're new, you're probably thinking, I had no idea there's so much work involved. Well, let me tell you, this thing is a lot of work. And I was told a long time ago by my dad, when he said to me, he said, nothing worthwhile ever comes for free, and most everything is a lot of work. And I went, don't tell me that, because I'm lazy and I don't want to work. So that's not going to work. But the truth of the matter is, the payoff for this at the end of the 12 steps is like no payoff you've ever had in your life. No drink, no ecstasy, psilocybin mushrooms, LSD, sex, shopping, rock and roll. I'm going to tell you honestly, that feeling I've never been able to get anywhere else. It's awesome. Just awesome. So now we go on to step 7, where we get humility, humbly asking him to remove our shortcomings, standing naked before God with nothing to hide and asking that our flaws in his eyes be removed. That's pretty humbling, isn't it? To stand before your God and say, take the good and the bad. Take all of me. Just take it. And surrendering that a power greater than ourselves knows who we are and what we are, and is going to show us every step of the way who we ought to be. What a gift. What a fabulous concept that our God is going to show us who to be. You know, there's a thing about going back to your creation, going back where everything started. You take a glass of water, it evaporates. Then it comes back to the way it started in its whole form again. You know? And you, same with electricity. Go to the root. The light switch isn't where the source is. The light switch isn't the source. So you go back to the source. And we do that with God. We go back to our source. And what happens when we go back to our source? We get power. That's how we get power. We're not powerless anymore. Because by the time we do these steps, God has given us the power and the choice not to drink again. Not to ever drink again. I have never drank since my first meeting. Never. I did smoke one cigarette of marijuana. But I will tell you this, I didn't get to hear clean and sober. I didn't hear it, you know. So I did change my date. But you know, I've never had to pick up a drink. I've never had to pick up anything since that September 4th, 1987. And you don't either. You don't either. Because your God will give you the power not to, if you choose to do this one day at a time. Okay, so by the time that happens, we're now at step 8. And we made a list of all persons we had harmed and became willing to make amends to them all. And the virtue of this is brotherly love. Brotherly love. Going in and saying to someone, I'm sorry, I was wrong, please forgive me. And I want to tell you, don't use the phone, don't use email, and don't use Facebook, and don't write them a note. This says, direct amends wherever possible. The reason we do that is we want to humble ourselves. You will lose the opportunity to be face-to-face with somebody if you don't make an appointment. If you've got to save money and fly to Utah, you do it. If you've got to save money and fly to San Francisco, you do it. I had to fly 4 different places. It took me 5 years to get it done, but I waited. Now, I do realize there are some places where you do this step that it would harm somebody. I had to write 1 letter. It was to my ex-husband. I couldn't call him because he was now on his 3rd wife. He had enough to contend with the other 2 wives. So I wrote a letter and his sister gave it to him. And that was the reason I did that. And that was a direction from my sponsor so that I would not call his home number and have his new wife answer the phone and have to deal with me. So you need to be really, really careful with this step. And in making your list of those we harmed before coming into recovery, it may sound really simple. I'm going to tell you right now, that can sound really simple. Becoming willing to actually make those amends, that's the hard part. So that's where the prayer comes in at this point. Praying to become willing to do it. You don't have to do them all in 1 month. You may have some that stay out there for years. But I'll tell you, when you start on this step, and make sure you go over that list with your sponsor, because the truth of the matter is, if you're anything like me, you needed to say you're sorry to everybody in the world who ever came in contact with me. That's how bad I felt. I think that's the shame of a woman alcoholic. Sorry, guys, I think it's just a different deal for us women. I think we come from shame, and we're very shame-based. And so I just think it's a little bit different. Not always, just sometimes. So make sure you take that list You list all those people, places, and things, and you share that with your sponsor so you can go one by one and make sure you actually owe an amends. Okay, now we come to step 9. Where am I? It's gone. What is step 9? Made direct amends wherever possible, except when we would injure them or others. And where did it go? And I don't know where it went. So, like, it's making direct amends. We make restitution. We make correction. Don't forget those amends that are financial. You know, we got a lot of places that you can contribute money to. One of the things that I did with my shoplifting, we have a home in Laguna Hills for women. I won't name names because we don't associate that. But I will forever be donating money to that place because I will forever be having to pay back my shoplifting because it was a lot. And you know, one of the virtues of step 9 is forgiveness. Making amends may seem like a bitter pill to swallow. It is kind of hard. But for those serious about recovery, it can be great medicine for the spirit and the soul. And the truth of the matter is, I only had one amends that was really icky. It really was. And the rest of them were absolutely incredible. Just incredible. So, I hope that's your experience. I really do. I hope that's your experience. on step 9, where it was talking about making direct amends, just to let you know that the virtue is justice. And if you look up just, it means just behavior. And isn't that amazing? I never had any just behavior before I came to Alcoholics Anonymous. I learned that here. Step 10. Continue to take personal inventory, and when we were wrong, promptly admitted it. You know, we can we talk about the maintenance steps, step 10, 11, and 12, that we do this every night, and I do this every night. And part of that, the virtue of step 10 is perseverance. Perseverance and diligence, for me, go hand in hand. That you have to be diligent with this program. How many people, after they get up their first year, and then all of a sudden you see them take a tailspin, and they're almost ready to relapse? We build up that first year so much. In fact, down here, I think it's built up a little bit too much. Because you get that build up to that first year, and all of a sudden after that first year you take a nosedive. I've really been very diligent in the fact that I do a new set of steps every January. I do the 12 steps all over again with my sponsor. I continue to go to a ton of meetings. I continue to be of service. I take commitments, and I hang with a lot of people, and I did a whole shift in my sobriety about a year ago, maybe even sooner, getting really involved with young people. And it's been a wonderful, wonderful shift in my sobriety. And you will find those shifts occur too. You'll have to mix up your meetings. You'll have to do different things. But it's called diligence and perseverance to be able to stay here. Nobody really likes to admit that we were wrong, you know. It's a bitter pill to swallow, kind of, especially where our ego gets in there. So sometimes, I know I sponsor people, they say the worst thing in the world is for me to make amends. But it's really necessary to maintain a spiritual progress in recovery to be able to admit that you were wrong. It's really, really important. And if you don't expand that spiritual life, you're going to stay in the place you are. I'm not going to say you're going to drink again, but I will tell you this. I don't want to stay where I am today. And today I'm in the most incredible spot. I live so free inside myself. I don't have that bondage of self. I have an absolute beautiful life with loving people. That husband that I took hostage absolutely adores me. I have a daughter. I have a son-in-law to be. I have a beautiful son. I have a beautiful life. Is it perfect? No. Not by a long shot. We've lost all our money. Everything we've worked for 35 years. The house is in foreclosure. It's pathetic is what it is. It's just plain pathetic. And yesterday I opened a thing from the IRS that says we owe $11,000. And we haven't earned any money in 2 years. We've been living off what we, you know, I mean, we banked it, you guys. We did it all right. We did the 401k and the investments, and we're going to be able to retire at 62. And I mean, we had it all. My husband was president of South Coast Medical Center for 20 years. He built the foundation. And then when they got bought out, he left and had to leave. And it just, you know, and my husband and I just look at each other and just laugh. We just laugh. You know, thank God our cars are paid for. I'd probably be riding a bike right now. So, you know, it's just, and I got to tell you, living with all that, oh my God, I am so happy. I'm so free, and I'm so joyful, and I have no idea what's going to happen to us, because I don't have to worry about what's going to happen to us, because I know God will take care of us. And I know, I just know that we're going to be okay no matter what. I hope you guys can feel that. This comes as a direct result of the steps, as a direct result of staying in Alcoholics Anonymous and living this program. If you're looking for a sponsor, find a sponsor that has a working knowledge of the Big Book, and as my friend Sarah says, has had an experience, a spiritual experience with the steps. That's what you want. That's what you want, to have somebody like that to guide you through this thing. Okay, we're almost done. Now we're on step 11. Right? Sought through prayer and meditation to I don't have it written down. Improve our conscious contact with God. I can't believe I have this piece of stuff is crazy. Okay, so thank you for helping me out with that one. I hope that you do this every day and every night. It tells us exactly how to do this, to improve our conscious contact with God. Supposedly, in the first 10 steps, by the time you get to 11, you have had some kind of God in your life. Because when it says improving, it's stating that we've already had that, okay? So it just means that we keep improving that. And step 11, there's 11 step meetings. There's people that will teach you how to meditate. There are people that will teach you how to pray. It tells you exactly in the Big Book of Alcoholics Anonymous, upon awakening, we review our day. So that's what I do. I do the third step, the seventh step prayer every single morning, and then I do a little bit of meditation to get me centered. Every afternoon at 4 o'clock, my girls and guys know, try not to call Mary, because I'm in meditation for an hour. Dr. Phil puts me there. I get a little Dr. Phil, then I go into meditation. And what I meditate on is all kinds of different things. You never know. You never know what's going to come up. One time, all my sponsees were circling, and I brought them down and had a little chat with each one of them. And before I knew it, I was chatting with them for an hour. It was one of the strangest meditations, and it was like, this is so cool. I get to talk to them, and they're not even here. And you know, I mean, I know you may think that's really weird. I don't care. I don't really care what you think of me. I just know that it works. It tells you exactly what to do at night, and it tells you how we review our day. How could we have done things differently? And that's where you learn about the amends step. Do I owe an amends? Look at it carefully. And if you can't self-evaluate yourself at your length of sobriety like I couldn't when I was in my first 5 years, then you better be talking to your sponsor every day, and you better be telling her those things that you are, him or her, those things that you are contemplating in that 10th step if you're not sure. So, I just want to remind you to have quiet time every morning. Don't leave home without it. It's very important. It's very, very important that you get God-centered. And please don't tell me that you're meditating behind the wheel of your car. Please don't tell me that. Because I know I got to be open-minded, and I got to let everybody do it the way they want to do it. But I'm telling you, that's not meditation. And if you are going into some kind of meditation, you've got a 5,000-pound vehicle beneath your fingers, and you're going to kill somebody because you're not paying attention if you're meditating behind the wheel of a car. So please, if that's your idea of meditation, please come talk to me after the meeting, and I'll help you change your idea of meditation. Okay? All right. Remember, all this that I'm saying to you, unless I'm quoting out the big book, and I see, as you know, I can't quote the big book. I can't even quote the frickin' steps. So if I'm quoting out of the big book, that's fact from Alcoholics Anonymous. Everything else is opinion. Okay? So it's just my opinion. So if you don't like it, too bad. Take it up with me after the meeting. We can have a great debate. Okay, step 12. What is it? Having had a spiritual... Oh, here they are, right here in front of me. Having had a spiritual awakening as the result of these steps, we tried to carry this message to others, especially alcoholics. Ah, especially alcoholics. And to practice these principles in all of our affairs, and that last principle is service. Okay, so we're going to carry the message. Does the meeting carry the message? Do I carry the message? Do I walk like I talk? Sometimes. All the time? Man, it's one of the reasons I am not putting a sticker on my car. You know, that says AA. You know, I will not do that because I am not carrying the message of Alcoholics Anonymous every time I get behind the wheel of a car. I try, but I am not. So, you know, we are not saints here, you guys. I don't want you to think that there's going to be a stained glass, you know, put up there in the name of Mary. Oh, you know, it just isn't going to happen. Am I going to try to do the best I can every single day? Yeah, I am. Am I the best Mary I've ever been in almost 25 years today? Yeah, I am. And why is that? Because every day I do the same things. Every day I ask God to guide me. Every day I give of myself. Goody, goody, God, what are we going to do today? And I have a little basic plan of what I'm going to do, and then he laughs at me, and then old Jesse's falling apart. Can I come over? Yeah, sure, honey, come on over. We sit in the backyards, and then we work the step. What do you think your part in is? You know, and we do that. And God has a plan for me every day. Every day something changes. Every day. It's a wonderful way to live. It's a wonderful. And being in service, man, if you're new, you better get a darn commitment. You know, they say there are no rules here. Don't listen to them. You know, there. Are, my sponsor said to me, okay, this is just a suggestion, but not for you, because you are so sick, you don't get suggestions, you get orders. And I am really glad she said that. And I'm really glad that I was the kind of person that wanted someone telling me what to do. I know most of you aren't. I know you're not. And I certainly try really hard not to sponsor that way. But I will tell you, if you want what I have, the only way you're gonna get it is to do what I did. There's only one program of Alcoholics Anonymous. There's not a million ways to do it. There's only one program. It's laid out in the big book of Alcoholics Anonymous. It tells us precisely how to do it. precisely if you read that book and you study it. So I'll end with this. For those in recovery programs, step 12 is simply how it works. Awakening to a sober usefulness. Awakening. Having had a spiritual awakening as a result of these steps. What does awakening mean? Is spiritual awakening the same as spiritual experience? Heck no, it's not. Spiritual awakening says to us we've been asleep. We've been spiritually asleep. So now I'm awakened to the idea that there is some kind of spiritual realm. The sole purpose of the book is for you to find a God of your understanding that will solve your problem with alcohol. It's the sole purpose of this book. I hope you have a spiritual experience with this book. I hope you have a beautiful time and a fun time going through these steps with your sponsor and getting to that place where you go, what's it going to be next? What's it going to be next? What next? What new lesson am I going to learn? I hope you become a sponge. I hope you have just that much of the peace and serenity and joy I have found living amongst alcoholics. Thank you very much. Yeah.